How do you like your coffee? Freshly roasted? You can just smell it, can't you? Well, how would you like it brought to you? If you're passionate about your coffee, then a Passion for the Bean is for you. At a Passion for the Bean, they custom roast coffee beans from around the world when you place your order, so your coffee is guaranteed to be fresh, rich, full-bodied, and full of flavor. That's not the taste that you get from coffee beans that have been sitting on a supermarket or coffeehouse shelf for weeks. Now, to have the ultimate coffee experience delivered to your home or office, call a Passion for the Bean at 480-703-2326. That's 480-703-BEAN. A Passion for the Bean has joined forces with the American Stroke Association in the fight to end stroke. Now, you can help by purchasing an ASA signature blend, and 30% of the proceeds will go directly to the ASA. Help us put an end to stroke. The life you save may be your own. And call a Passion for the Bean today, 480-703-2326.
From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we're here every week to discuss different mental health-related issues from a holistic perspective, which means finding a sense of balance in our life by raising our consciousness in terms of what our body, mind, and spirit aspects of who we are all trying to tell us and how we can bring them more into balance. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, this is a live call-in show this week, and if you are so inclined, once you hear our topic, which today is about sex and crystal meth use, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310, and that's whether you're calling from the Phoenix area or whether you're listening via the internet, as I know some of you are, because I hear from you via email once in a while. So thanks for listening, and we are going to be talking tonight about sex and crystal meth in general and in specific to what's going on in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. Now, June is considered Gay Pride Month, and so for a number of the weeks in June and July, I'm going to be doing some shows that are very specific to GLBT issues. And while crystal meth use and sex addiction and things like that are not only specific to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, tonight we're going to be talking about that, but also assuming that these issues exist well outside the gay and lesbian community. Now, crystal meth. Some of you who are listening yourselves may have a problem with crystal meth. It's a very unfortunate, popular drug right now, and some of you may know somebody who has a problem with crystal meth, and you have no idea what to do to help them, why it's happening, and it's probably causing total insanity in your life, whether you're the user or somebody in that user's life. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight, and I also want to remind you that we have some giveaways tonight, and they are a pair of tickets. We're going to be giving away at least two pairs of tickets tonight to the play at the Mesa Arts Center. It started today, actually, through June 11th, at called Tuesdays with Maury, and based on the book, and it is a live play, and the first two callers who have a question for us or have some comments to make will be given two free tickets. The play is being produced by the Arizona Theater Company, and it's in Mesa Arts Center starting tonight through June 11th. So again, the number is 480-949-1310. Crystal meth, and I'm going to go right into it. I'm going to get my guest on the air with me. His name is Joe Amico. Now, some of you who listen to talk radio in the Phoenix area may recognize that name because Joe is formerly out of Phoenix and now in Los Angeles, and formerly not just a therapist locally in Phoenix, but a talk show host. He had his own program for quite a while in the Phoenix area, and this is his grand return to the airwaves in Phoenix. Joe, I want to welcome you onto the air with us tonight.
Thank you, Stuart. It's great to be back on the air, but it's very interesting to be on the other seat.
Being interviewed.
Yes.
Well, I have a feeling we're going to be asking each other a lot of questions tonight. A little bit of your background. You actually have a divinity degree, but also are a certified addictions counselor, correct?
Yes, I have two certifications. One is a national certified addiction specialist from the American Academy of Healthcare Providers and the Addictive Disorders, and I'm certified in alcohol, drugs, and sex addiction with them. But there in Arizona, I am a licensed independent substance abuse counselor. I still keep my licensure in Arizona because California doesn't have licensure for substance abuse counselors yet.
That's right. So it's a good thing you keep that going. Now, you also are now working at a very special program, a very unique program, I might say, called Alternatives, which actually, as I know, is the only dedicated alcohol, drug abuse, and addiction program in the country for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, correct?
Well, I'll be fair to my competitor and former employer. There are two programs nationally that are dedicated to GLBT patients and clients. However, Alternatives happens to be the only gay-owned and operated mental health addictions program for the gay community.
And what's your role at Alternatives?
I'm currently the Vice President for Program Development and Community Educator. So that means I get to do a lot of speaking at conferences, do in-services for other professionals, as well as oversee the clinical aspects of all of our programs.
Well, then, tonight you're going to be doing some of that community education, because when we talked, we were very specific about not just doing this about crystal meth, which we know is at epidemic proportions within the gay, particularly gay men, but it's also are rapidly rising outside the GLBT community. In fact, I was talking with Betsy Spear today, a local therapist, and she was telling me in the work she's done here with Tarzan and stuff that teenage girls is one of the largest groups really getting into this crystal meth scene. Have you heard that?
Yes, and a lot of that's around the image issues. So because stimulants, of course, of which meth is the category, people use it for losing weight. And so a lot of teenage girls use it to continue their image, or particularly if they are concerned about studies and being involved in various activities. Obviously, as a stimulant, it keeps people awake and up longer. But there in Arizona, interestingly enough, it's pretty prevalent even among the older straight community. I was, for the first couple of years when I was in Arizona, I moved there in 99, and for 4 years I was at a program in Mesa called Desert Winds, where the majority of our clients came from the probation department for alcohol and drug abuse. And I would say even back then, about 60%, it was certainly more than a majority of the clients that we saw had crystal meth as their drug of choice or the issue that got them into trouble with the law.
Wow. So let's start by, what is crystal meth?
Well, crystal meth, as I mentioned, is a stimulant. Methamphetamine is the title of the classification of drug. And if people knew exactly what they were putting into their bodies, a lot of times they actually wouldn't do it. That's one of the things we've been doing with the town hall meetings around the country to bring experts as well as folks who are former users to the forum to educate the public, especially those that may be continuing to use, what actually goes into crystal meth. The main ingredient is benzedrine, which is why a lot of states now don't allow over-the-counter nasal sprays, because that's the main ingredient in nasal sprays. So they were just disappearing overnight over in a lot of pharmacies and grocery stores and drug stores. So a lot of states have now made anything with benzedrine in it has to be behind the counter. But
not just nasal sprays, but the pills, the antihistamine pills, too.
Exactly. Anything that has it in. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And but there's different places you can get information on the net, and you can actually download various recipes for making crystal meth. So there's tons of labs in the Phoenix area, I happen to know, and there were a lot of them busted while I was there. I'm sure they haven't all disappeared. But people in cooking up this substance use such things as Drano, antifreeze, lye. It's just incredible the kinds of stuff that people put into this to make the substance before it's used and put into the body. So it's not a very healthy drug. It's not natural.
Right. Well, you said something that if people really knew what they were putting in their bodies, they wouldn't. But we all know that an addict is an addict, and if an addict's going to use, they're not thinking, well, is this a safe and healthy thing for me to use or not? Because, you know, their goal is to use.
Yeah, but the insidious thing about this drug, I've told people that in the 25 years that I've been working in the substance abuse field, this truly is the most insidious drug I've ever encountered. And because when you talk about addicts, this drug is actually catching a lot of folks who ordinarily would not have been classified as addicts. They haven't been abusing other drugs or chemicals, but they get sucked into it by either, like a lot of the teenagers, it's at parties with gay men. It's over the internet for going to sex parties, which... The abbreviation that's used on the internet and on a lot of the chat rooms is P&P, and the P stands the first P stands for party, the second P stands for play. Party is talking about the drug, and play is talking about sex.
Right. So when they're putting that out there, they're actually looking for a partner who will use with them and have sex with them.
And to be technical, partners. Most of the party and play are talking about huge parties, often orgies. And so what happens, and this is where it's been a huge concern to those of us who work in the field, especially in the gay community, is the number of partners people will encounter during one of these parties. And we all know that that drugs lower inhibitions. And so even those that have been very conscious about safer sex practices, once you start using drugs, of course, caution gets thrown to the wind. People don't pay any attention. So we end up, number one, with a number of people at these parties who are all having sex with each other, multiple partners during the night, unprotected sex, which is why we're also seeing a large increase in other STDs like syphilis and gonorrhea. And chlamydia. Chlamydia has made a huge resurfacing, unfortunately, in the medical scene. And in addition to that, the folks that are already HIV positive when they take this drug and are involved in this kind of activity tend to binge, usually in 3 to 5 day binges. Well, during that time, they're also not taking their HIV meds. And if they happen to be on psychotropics, they don't take those medications either. So everything gets out of whack during this time. It's not just about going out on a Friday night, having a party, and tying one on anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, I think, why there's such an increase with the STDs and even HIV with teenagers, because if they're using it, they're doing the same thing sexually, and there are a lot of teen sex parties that we're hearing about, and the issue of so much crystal meth being used in what is normally considered red state conservative areas like Middle America, and there have been a lot of stories and documentaries that have really exposed a lot of what's going on in those rural areas.
Yes, in fact, the one of the first big booms in crystal meth labs was in Missouri. And it's now very prevalent in the Midwest. It's an interesting phenomenon that things usually start on the east and west coasts and move to the middle. This one has been pretty heavy on the west coast for the last 15 years, and it has been in the Midwest for the last 6 to 8 years, and it's just actually getting to be a problem on the east coast.
One of the things, if we talk about the history of this that I read recently, is, you know, like with most drugs, is actually an appropriate use of most drugs that end up becoming abused. And one of the things that I read was that crystal meth actually has been around for quite some time. In fact, during World War II, particularly the German army was using a lot of it in order to keep going, in order to stay alert. And it's been used by, you know, other people who have needed to stay awake. So at a certain point...
Yeah, let's not blame the Germans. The U.S. did, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
The Germans, actually, the Germans, the U.S., and the Japanese, those three in particular, used meth quite frequently for both the soldiers that were on foot in order for them to have stamina and be able to stay awake and to be alert and fight longer, but also for
the pilots.
Pilots, exactly. And it's still used by the U.S. government for long-term pilots, which is really scary.
Talk about that. Yeah, talk about that.
And in fact, in the 2% of the Japanese population were addicted to meth at the end of World War II. So it's not an innocent drug.
How many U.S. soldiers came back with the addiction, do you know?
I have not seen an actual statistic on that. But I do know that, and also the other common use in our country is long-haul truck drivers.
Right.
They also use meth to stay awake at times.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's used a little differently in those connections than it is with gay men. The reason that I've been doing a lot of my talking and work with folks about the combination of sex and meth is that one of the things that meth does is that it robs the brain of serotonin. And serotonin and other endorphins, you know, are those things that make us feel good. And so what happens is that the longer-term meth users, if they're really depleting their serotonin levels, then they don't have much that makes them feel good, number one. The other issue is that we also know that sex also makes us feel good and actually stimulates that same part of the brain. So you get that combination with these guys that are doing the PNP, the party and play, and combining the sex with the use of the drug, just doing this double whammy. And the reason that the drug then becomes so insidious in terms of sobriety, people being able to stay abstinent from the drug, is that they have combined that all of the sex behavior with the use of the drug for so long. Now, we don't have to do drugs. You know, we don't. None of us have to use or abuse the kind of drugs that methamphetamine and other what we call illegal or mood altering drugs are about. But we all have to have sex. That's a part of who we are as human beings. So the combination here is that I have guys who their biggest issue in being able to stay sober is that they talk about the fact that they are fearful of ever having sex again. For a number of reasons. One,
can I say one thing for a minute?
Sure.
Because what I hear from a lot of my clients, I have a lot of clients I've worked with to deal with, it's not even so much that they're fearful that they'll never have sex again. They equate it that I'll never have great or that kind of sex again.
Exactly. That's part of the fear, that it will never be as good.
Right.
And or that they would ever be able to do the kinds of things that they did while under the influence of the drug. So one of the fears are that if they have sex, it won't be as good, they won't enjoy it as much, and that will be a trigger to want to use the drug. For some of the other guys, their fear is that any kind of sex is going to be a trigger them to want to use the drug again. So there's a number of reasons around that being a trigger. So part of what I tell people is that when they stop using the drug, it's and this is what I've been trying to train other substance abuse professionals is we have to treat this drug differently than we do other drugs, because if we don't talk about sex and sexual behavior as a part of the recovery process, I don't have much hope for most of these people being able to stay clean. That was not just true of gay men, as you've equated several times. It's not just about gay men. Actually, when I had my private practice there in Phoenix, I actually had several straight women who had been involved with sex clubs with their partners, their straight partners there in the Phoenix area, who had gotten involved with this drug as well.
Well, I want to remind my listeners that we're here with Joe Amico. This is Stuart Altshuler. The show is Tell the Truth Faster, and today we're talking about sex and crystal meth in the gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. If you have a question or a comment or something of your own experience you want to share with us, and you want two tickets to Tuesdays with Maurice, the number is 480-949-1310. So, what happens, how do people usually get started with something like this? I mean, alcohol is usually around people as they're growing up. It's seen so much in the media and, you know, certain drugs, marijuana, cocaine, things like that, have been so much more societally invasive. How does somebody get started on crystal meth?
Well, there's a number of ways. You already alluded to when you asked the question about some of the teenage girls. There are folks who began using it in order to lose weight. So there are some folks who got into it in that particular direction. In terms of the gay community, a lot of it has really been, it's got started with the circuit parties, because that's become almost a given at circuit parties these days. In fact, I will hear people talk more about crystal meth as a part of the circuit parties than they do alcohol. It's become a staple, if you will.
Share with the listeners what a circuit party is. Because there are a lot of people out there that may not have heard that term because they're not necessarily in the gay community.
Sure. The circuit parties actually began as fundraisers for folks in the HIV community.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dances that are held in various communities around the country, and they usually go on for several days. Sometimes, for example, the circuit party in Provincetown goes for a whole week. There's the white party, as it's called. It's always held Easter weekend in Palm Springs, California. So there's these various parties all around the country, and they're always high energy. The real high energy dance music. They bring in some of the top DJs from all over the world for these parties. So it becomes this huge event where, particularly the trim, buff kind of, individual goes, it's all about looks. It's all about, the music. It's all about the partying scene. And obviously if, one of the ways that crystal meth got introduced to that whole, particular phenomena was the fact that obviously if you take a stimulant, you can dance longer, you'll have more energy, you can stay up for days and continue the party and not have to sleep. Well, they thought that was just a great thing. So that was really the boom to, if you will, to crystal meth, particularly within the gay community. And there are people who actually make either a hobby or almost a lifestyle out of attending these circuit parties wherever they are all over the country.
All over the world?
All over the world, yeah.
I mean, I've known people to go to Australia, go to Europe, as well as around the country, and you're right, they're as obsessed with the circuit parties as they are with the drugs or anything else that's going on.
Exactly. That's correct, yeah.
And the physical image, you know, issue, especially around gay men. I mean, everything is about, you know, looking your best and being the best and all this stuff. I've had clients and friends that spend a month every day in the gym preparing for the next circuit party.
Mm-hmm.
That's how obsessed they get with it. And then when it's over and they get home, they're useless for at least a week because they're so wiped out, and everything they did good for their body before the party has now been, like, devastated, and their body, health-wise, has gone totally down.
Yeah, this is some of the... I'm glad that you brought that up, but let's talk about some of the physical consequences of using this drug. Because, again, a lot of folks, especially when they first start using this drug, and the folks that are, of course, are promoting it at the parties and these other events will all say, you know, there's no big deal in it. And, in fact, I've treated a lot of circuit partiers who came to my private practice there in Phoenix would say, well, I only use it once a month when I go to a party. It's, you know, not an issue. But the longer-term use has some interesting effects. I think if any of you have seen the some of the shows that have been done on the, I think every major national news show like Nightline, 60 Minutes, 48 Hours, has done a show about crystal meth. And a lot of the newspapers, the major magazines now have all done them. And if you can see what it actually does to the brain. Some of these shows have show you pictures of what a brain looks like, a normal brain before meth
PET
use,
scans,
after meth use.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then there's the teeth. It literally rots people's teeth. We had our clients in Mesa when I was there in that program with the folks that were on probation had horrible teeth. And from the abuse that they've been taking by crystal meth, we are seeing in our inpatient facility here in Glendale, California, we have a psychiatrist who was teaches at USC, and we're thinking of trying to do some research because we are noticing more and more 30 and 40 year olds coming in with cardiovascular and pulmonary problems. 35-year-olds were having heart attacks. I actually had someone in that age range when I was there in Phoenix who was a very fit individual. Exercised all the time, had a very demanding job physically, and was up to do that, but started abusing crystal meth and ended up hospitalized with a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of lung problems, lots of heart problems with these folks. And then there's the psychiatric symptoms that show up. It used to be that folks thought that the psychiatric symptoms, like seeing bugs, people talk about crystal bugs or meth bugs. Mm-hmm. And people who would, like, you see them when they're high or coming down, scratching their skin, picking at their skin. They've got holes in their skin from trying to get the bugs out from under their skin. Those are hallucinations. There are people who have tremendous anxiety, depression. There are people who truly are suicidal, you know, when they're withdrawing from this drug because of the depression. Methamphetamine is a stimulant. So you get very high when you're using the drug. So then when you stop using the drug, of course, you crash. And there are folks who actually have committed suicide as a part of the withdrawal. So those are some of the immediate effects.
There's one other that I think is major that you haven't mentioned. That's the paranoia that people get when they're on it. I have one friend in particular that's been fighting this particular drug forever. I mean, he's had addiction issues for most of his life, but he knows not to be around. He can only be around me when he's not using. And I always know when I get the phone call and he starts saying someone's tapping his phone line or something like that, I said, you're using, and I don't want to speak to you right now.
Oh,
you know, and it goes forever, and you can't get them out of that paranoid loop. You can be as rational as you want, but you can never talk them down from that paranoid thinking until they wind down from it.
And you see people putting tinfoil over their windows, and somebody comes and rings the bell, or somebody goes by, that you see someone peeking out from behind the tinfoil. That's a pretty good sign.
Right. Well, normally you think of that in terms of someone who's psychotic, but this is really a direct result of what's going on in the brain as a result of using this drug.
Exactly. Now, the part that's very unfortunate, what we're seeing now in our inpatient psychiatric program, is that in the long-term users, we've got folks now who've been kind of cycling through our program for 15 years in using this drug, is that it's not just a result of the drug anymore. These effects are becoming permanent. people who were
right. The brain damage has really set in.
It's rewired their brain. That's exactly mm-hmm. what's happened, and that's just horrifying to me.
Well, I think if anybody has known anyone dealing with this, I mean, most people who knows an alcoholic or an addict or whatever knows how horrifying it can be. But this really, in many ways, takes it to a whole nother level. So if you're listening to the show and you have a question for Joe Amico or myself, Stuart Altshuler, or you have some comments or have some experience of your own you want to share, the number in the Phoenix area is 480-949-1310. Now, we talked about the health consequences, but you and I both know that there, like with any addiction, but even more so with this, there's like career, finance, and relationship issues that really also are really catastrophic for people. So talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, it is, and it's heavy for me when I think about it and see the devastation that has caused in folks. And we have in our residential program people who were prominent authors. Bankers, lawyers, who lost everything. They lost their career, they lost their families, they've lost their houses, their cars, everything they had. And what every crystal meth addict who has been another kind of addict at some time also will tell mm-hmm. you, it happens so much faster with this drug than it does any other. You know, with
Why's
alcoholics,
that?
You've got folks that maybe started as teenagers, and they got through their 20s and 30s, and it may not have really affected a career until they were in their 40s or 50s. And mm-hmm. With this drug, it like goes from 0 to 60 in a very short time.
Why do you think?
Well, it's the particular effect that it has on the brain and the way that people abuse it with the binge use and mm-hmm. over and over, and they just cannot stop. What we've seen in terms of those who have tried to treat this drug is that it has a 30, 60, 90-day cycle. That people will say, you know, there isn't really any detox from this drug, and, you know, you just sleep it off and all of that. Mm-hmm. There has got to be some kind of psychological dependency and withdrawal as well because, yeah, you sleep it off in 3 to 5 days, but why is it that almost like clockwork, 30, 60, 90 days, you see people relapsing? There's mm-hmm. something about that cycle. So what we've been discovering, many of us in the treatment phase, is that we're trying to make our treatment last at least 120 days. Because if you can get through those 90 days and people stay sober, they just seem to have a better chance of being able to stay clean and sober. But there's
so what are you doing during that initial period to set them up for dealing with that 30, 60, or 90 days? I mean, what does your program do in terms of that? We're talking about alternatives now.
Sure. Well, I get asked this all over the country, particularly among other professionals. They'll ask me, because there's quite a debate in the professional field about the detox and withdrawal and the use of psychotropics. And what we're finding, and we believe really is justified, is using anti-anxiety and antidepressants as a part of that initial period of time. Because, mm-hmm. Again, the stimulants have robbed the body of the serotonin and endorphins, and so we need to give them some serotonin uptake inhibitors or Wellbutrin's also good because it also helps with endorphins. And we really believe that what this drug does to both that part of the brain and memory has also been robbed for a lot of these folks.
Yeah.
And so they don't really have a great ability to be patient and to remember. Now, I don't know any addict that's patient. You know, addicts are always, you know, I want what I want when I want it, and I want it right
uh-huh.
now. Well, it's even more so with folks who are meth addicts. And if you try to do what the old-fashioned substance abuse treatment was, which is, you know, well, just hang in there and it's going to get better, that isn't going to work for a meth addict. They got to see results mm-hmm. now. And if they don't
right.
see results now, boom, they're out the door and they're back using again. So So number one, especially if they come to our inpatient facility, the first thing we're going to do is probably get them on anti-anxiety and antidepressants, because that's going to help them be able to withstand that first period where it's like, well, I just can't stand this and I got to go do something.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we do. The second that we're doing is we've learned there's a UCLA study that's been very helpful to me that talks about using contingency management in addition to cognitive behavioral. Cognitive behavioral is the old standard in substance abuse. That's kind of what most people use. It means how you think affects how you behave, which affects how you feel about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But they were now finding that a combination of cognitive behavioral with contingency management works. Now, contingency management means you reward people for their behavior. And in the study that was done, it meant that if you got a clean urine, you got a voucher. You got paid, in other words, for having a clean mm-hmm. urine. My marketing person likes to refer to it as P for pay. And we're not quite that crass in our program. And when I was actually in the program in Mesa, I really enjoyed what we did at Desert Winds, because part of that curriculum, which was back when we had a lot of folks from what was called the Prop 200 program in Arizona, is that if you had perfect attendance and a clean urine, you got movie passes. And that was a stimulus for hanging in there, for doing it. So, if you will, I think the traditional abstinence-based 12-step model has had some more in treatment programs has been more about shaming and punishment. And mm-hmm. what I'm working with our programs, especially around the crystal meth issue, is to start looking at awards and rewards instead of shame and punishment. Mm-hmm. So we're building a tier program in our residential program, which is typically 90 days, to have people earn various kinds of awards or rewards rather than taking away things. We're adding things rather than taking away things.
Now, when you're talking about some of these people that are in the program who, as you say, were like, you know, bigwigs and had a real high life and stuff, even without the drugs, how impressed are they with these little vouchers and stuff? I mean, does it make that much of a difference to them?
Mm. Well, we're not in our program. We actually aren't using the voucher system. We chose to go more with a different kind of way of awarding people. But we're just in the process of turning that around right now and starting that. So you ask me again in 6 months, and I'll give you a better answer, because we're just starting that. But I think. Obviously, as I say, the UCLA study found that was the most successful approach.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about, again, getting into alternatives. Alternatives is specifically for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. Why a separate program as opposed to, you know, there are other programs like Sierra Tucson and the Meadows and others right there in the Phoenix area that are GLBT friendly,
mm-hmm.
but yours is a program that is specific to GLBT clients.
Yep.
Why?
It takes away having to deal with any of those other issues that many of us who are GLBT deal with. And one of the things that I talk about is that nothing drives addiction more than shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know very many GLBT people, no matter how healthy an environment, how liberal, open, and supportive a family you may have grown up in, we still live in a culture where it's not okay to be gay in a lot of different ways. Obviously, what's still going on in our, we're really backpedaling in a lot of the states on gay rights, the whole marriage amendment stuff, all of those kinds of things just keep bringing up that, you know, we're not okay or we're not accepted or affirmed for exactly who we are. For
mm-hmm.
years in traditional treatment centers, a lot of therapists would say to individuals, well, it's okay that you told me that you're gay, but don't talk about it in group because
right.
If you do, I can't guarantee your safety from the other clients. And I've had people who have come to family programs I would say to the patient, well, did your partner come to a family program when you were in other treatment programs? Well, yeah, but he came as my roommate, or he came
right.
as my friend. We never really dealt with the real issues. So we do away with all that stigma. You don't have to worry about talking about being gay. You get to be who you are and really focus on what's important, which is the recovery issues around either your mental health or addiction issues.
And for a lot of the people in the program, too, in your program, they may still be dealing with their own self-image as a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender person, their own shame and guilt around it, but at least they're not being attacked in the process.
Very different.
From the
That's
outside.
Exactly right. It's a safe place to continue to do the coming out process, examine who you are, question who you are. Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to talk about, you know, often in doing addiction treatment, we talk about internal triggers and external triggers for people. Are there something specifics that you find with the crystal use? Is it a sexual trigger that a lot of them have? Is it the thought of the next circuit party coming, or is it something else? I mean, what kind of triggers are you most aware of for most people?
Well, again, particularly in the population that I'm dealing with gay men, it really is around the sexual issue. That's the huge trigger. One of the things that I do with my groups, and I've trained my staff to use, and I hand this out at workshops I do for other professionals, is a sheet that I came up with several years ago called Sex and Sobriety. And it asks people to examine how often did sex and using go together for you, where did you go to meet people for sex, what did they use, did they expect you to use. And then in the last part of this worksheet, I ask folks to then put three categories. In terms of your sobriety, what are going to be the safe sex practices? Now, not about catching diseases or HIV, it's about what kind of sex is going to be safe for you and not lead you to relapse, what's possibly safe and what's definitely unsafe, and to look at those categories and examine them and figure out what is there for you. Because, you know, we are sexual beings. People want to have sex. And if so much of having sex was a part of using this drug, then it stands to reason for me going out and then wanting to get back on the internet and hooking up. I had one guy in one of the groups that I led recently where that's exactly what he did. This guy constantly, even though he was in a sober living, he was sober from the drugs, but he was still getting online and hooking up with people all the time. And but one of the things he put in his possibly safe category was he still thought it was okay to hook up with people who used as long as they didn't use when he was around them.
Because talk about denial, right?
Exactly, you got it. Uh-huh. You can guess what happened.
Uh-huh, yes.
He relapsed, he came back. We're working on the issue some more.
Now, I think you know that one of the things other than my private practice that I do is I do consulting at some of the gay bathhouses in L.A., and I'm actually on site doing crisis intervention with some of the guys there or assessment and referral things. In fact, that there was actually been a couple of guys over the years that went from the bathhouse to alternatives because I happened to be there when they were finally coming down or realizing they had a problem.
That's true.
And
thank you.
I think... In a lot, well, yeah, I mean, I.
Thank you,
know,
for being there
one,
for them.
Well, no, I mean, thank the owners for being conscious enough
yes.
before any laws were passed to actually pay the money to pay a consulting fee to me to do this. And, you know, I got to give, you know, Midtown Spas and Flex a lot of credit and for really knowing that they had a population that they could serve in other ways and they really chose to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But my point really is that, first of all, I think the bathhouses get a really bad rap because people looking for a scapegoat. There
mm-hmm.
are a lot of people who use these venues that are not using and are there for, you know, alternative reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But... a lot of people may go there who are using, and it's one of the venues that they may have the multiple partners and the unsafe sex. And the bathhouses themselves, you know, they're with condoms, they have neither, they have testing there. But it's not going to stop it, but at least it's an environment then if you're offering these kind of services, you get to reach some of these people, especially some of the very closeted people who are going to end up in parks again and other places.
Exactly.
So the addiction, the combination of the crystal and the sex, I mean, we see in all venues, and you mentioned the internet because I think that is even a more popular thing today than even the bathhouses or the sex parties or, you know, other things you've mentioned. And there's no way to monitor who's doing what on the bathhouses. I would imagine the only thing you could do is wait for somebody to crash or get arrested or get in trouble if the only thing they're doing is the internet hooking up, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, now it's interesting. There are folks who are trying to intervene, even on the internet, in the same way that, like you mentioned, being for crisis intervention there in the bathhouses. And by the way, I know that at least one of the bathhouses there in Phoenix does the same. And I always was proud of their owner as well, because that's part of what he talked about when the city was trying to close down some of the bathhouses there in the city and creating problems for some of those clubs, is saying that, you know, that you're just driving everybody out to the parks where the people aren't providing condoms and counseling for exactly those reasons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think you're right. There's some containment and some sense of support within it's a community within itself, if you will. But on the internet, there's a couple of things that happen. One of the AIDS organizations there in Phoenix for a while actually employed somebody who would go online and go into the chat rooms and try to talk to people about the you know, so if they would kind of be chatting along and people are talking about P&P and they got talking about the drugs or get talking about the sex, to then interject and talk about the dangers and the concerns about, you know, what was going on. So that's one of the places.
How incredible.
Yeah, yeah. People, now, that unfortunately, that organization is no longer there in Phoenix, but I hope somebody took up the ball and is doing that kind of prevention, because that's wonderful prevention and intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
There's also a great website called tweaker.org.
Mm-hmm.
And tweaker.org is run by another group up in San Francisco who are really concerned about what's going on with this drug, and they do a lot of prevention and intervention work as well. And so there's a lot of information on tweaker.org about the drug and the dangers, and they also often will interact with people who email them or talk to them or get onto various other sites and interact with folks.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also know that Alternatives does amazing work getting people into treatment and also doing the treatment, but there's something new that they've started that I don't think's really been done before on the scale they're doing it. They have started in Palm Springs a resort that's sober and safe for people who also want to be able to go and relax and have a resort atmosphere without having the sex and the drugs all around them. What's the name of the resort that they have in Palm Springs?
The Studios at Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And
talk about that. Why did they do that, and how's it going?
You're exactly right. This has been a dream come true for our CEO, Michael Ralke. And one reason that I wanted to work for Alternatives, and I've been extremely happy in the organization, is that Michael is very committed to the gay and lesbian community, as well as the recovering community and giving back to the community. And so the Studios was a concept about having a safe place to go where if you're in recovery, you can stay at a resort and not have to worry about being in a place where everybody's partying and using and causing problems for particularly for folks in early sobriety. And
mm-hmm.
so folks could go there and just go as a retreat or as a resort. But we also have Alternatives in Palm Springs that meets at the Desert AIDS Project. So if folks want to go there in early sobriety and they still want to go to some groups or have some individual counseling, they can do that at our program there. And we actually transport people back and forth between the studios and alternatives programming if they don't have their own transportation. But it looks, you're right, it looks, if folks want to see it, they could go to our website, Alternatives Inc. And it's just a beautiful setting. Yeah, there's a pool, and the every unit has its own kitchenette. And so we provide continental breakfast and a light lunch every day. So people are on their own either in the evening for dinner, or they can cook themselves. And a lot of the community there who live there get into doing that with each other. And we also now have several 12-step groups that meet on campus, and we once a month do a barbecue for the whole community that's open to the community. And we bring in name celebrities who come and either perform or are part of the telling their story as a part of the barbecue.
Wow. Well, I know my friend Lenwood Patterson's out there and working there, and I just found out today, actually, that another friend and colleague of mine, Christine Logan, is also out there working with him. So I really know that you guys have set it up with some really quality people to help operate it. So we talked a lot about gay men. I don't want it to be an afterthought, but I would assume that there's lesbian and bisexual people that make use of the resort and alternatives. But what is the situation with crystal meth in the lesbian community, if you know?
We see some in our facilities. It's interesting that GLBT facilities, this was true when I was at Pride as well as at Alternatives, you'll run about the same percentage of men and women as other facilities do, which means generally in treatment programs you find 80% men, 20% women. And of the women that we do see in our programs, the crystal meth doesn't run as high a percentage in the terms of the drug of choice as it does with the men that we see.
But it is there.
It's higher in the transgender community. Now, there's a community where it's a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm. Why would you think?
I think it's because there's, number one, there's, again, so many transgender folks are so involved in sexual behavior in various kinds of ways. Some of them are even involved in as sex workers, and so that whole combination of both the environment of the people who they hang around with, but there's also dealing with all of the issues of I don't have the money to get the operation, or I don't even know who I am, or people don't respect me for who I am, nobody understands me. It's a great drug to get lost in and not have to deal with what's going on around you.
Well, I would think also, I mean, if you're talking about anyone with body image issues, mm-hmm. it would be a transsexual or transgender person, and that this would be a drug that would either help them escape or help them lose weight or, you know, help them deal with some of the body image issues as they're going through transitions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we have just a couple of minutes, and I want to make sure people, first of all, know how to get in touch with Alternatives, and you mentioned that, and that's alternativesinc.com or org?
Golly.
What's their website? Actually, I have it right
here. I think I got it right. Yeah. I have my mind goes blank here, but I've got it right here, too.
It is alternativesinc.com.
Thank you.
And
Phone number is 1-800-DIAL-GAY. That's always the easiest part.
Right. And, again, I remind my listeners that The website for the show is tellthetruthfaster.com, very easy to remember. And if you don't remember any of the other information in terms of how to reach Joe Amico or alternatives, you can always go to my website for the links. And also, this show within the week will be up on my archives, so if you want to hear the information again or you have a friend or loved one that you want to make sure they get this information, they'll be able to listen to it in the archives on tellthetruthfaster.com. Now, how do they reach you if they want?
Well, they can reach me. The easiest way to reach me is at joeamico.com.
That makes it easy.
Because if you go to joeamico.com, people can email me through there, and my office phone number is listed there as well.
And also what workshops you're doing and all that stuff, too.
Yes, all my...
So, Joe, I really want to thank you for taking time on your Friday night to join us. I think this is a very important issue, and I want to thank you for being here.
And, Fred, I want to thank you for your commitment to the community in doing this kind of service.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'll be here next Friday night, Tell the Truth Faster. And remember, for the next couple of weeks, you'll be getting a bit more topics dealing with GLBT issues in honor of Gay Pride Month. So I want to thank you. This is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM, 1310 AM in Phoenix. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.